News Radio 1120 KPNW. A couple of updates for you on the commute this morning. We had a flipped car on the Northwest Expressway that is backing up traffic. And on Highway 99 at milepost 118, we've got a crash just about 4 miles north of Eugene. So some problems out there this morning. Avoid them if you can. Probably because the roads are wet. That means they're going to be slick because of the oil. And we'll probably see a few more of these as the morning progresses.
Oh, aren't you the optimist?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, our next guest is David Scott. He is a global educator and managing director of an education think tank in Asia, and he joins us on the Kendall Celebrity Hotline from Singapore. David Scott, great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to be with you.
Out of curiosity, let's talk about your background, your experience. When we talk about education, what have you been doing to get you to this point?
Well, it's been, 25 years running now. Probably best known for my contribution in creating and running large-scale school systems, both in the U.S. initially, in the Middle East, and most recently in China.
Patterned how? What makes these different?
The schools themselves?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're private schools for the most part, although we've done a number of partnerships with government schools in various countries. And quite frankly, what makes them different is the creativity and the innovation, laboratories that we essentially are able to create, allowing children to really expand, grow, discover themselves, and then sort of take those gifts into the world.
As an overview jump-off spot, we've been talking about all morning long the stats here in Oregon, concerning and alarming and embarrassing they are. 32% of our high school students don't graduate in a four-year plan. And like I told you off the air, everywhere you look, there's not a lot of light. There's not a lot of good things for parents to feel good about. How, when you look at the educational system here in America compared to, say, Asia, as we're going to talk about in comparison, how much of a tweak and how possible would it be to get things kind of turned the other way and get the numbers and the stats looking a little bit more positive? How much of a tweak would we have to go through?
Well, it's an interesting question because, over here in Asia, they're looking to more westernize their approach. And what I mean by that is they have a much more formalized, disciplined, structured, and very respectful approach toward education here. The teachers are revered. Education is everything in Asia. But yet they lack in terms of generating creative, innovative, independent thinking, communicative students that end up going on into the workforce, the global workforce. Now, in the U.S., on the other hand, we excel in developing communicative, creative, innovative, problem-solving individuals. At least we have up until, let's say, recent generation. What we're lacking on the U.S. side is that structure, that discipline, that same respect and sense of awe for education that we had back in the 20th century at times, which allowed us to generate these wonderfully creative and innovative individuals. And, historically, it would be very difficult to argue with the success we had in the last century. But the question is, where are we going now?
So basically what you're saying is somewhere in between is perfection, or what we both kind of need to strive for.
Yes, as in most everything in life, it's striking that healthy balance. And I would say we both have something to learn from one another in terms of East and West and East, if we can call it that. But I agree with you in terms of we should be alarmed with 32% of our high school students not graduating. And those figures are even worse in other pockets of the United States. And we should be alarmed with that because, to me, it's all education has been and always will be about relationships. And I would ask, where are we not relating properly with our children that they come in as these incredibly intuitive beings with great potential in kindergarten, and somehow systematically by the time they're leaving high school, They've lost that sense of intuitiveness, like who they are really. They've lost that drive, that energy, that desire to actually stretch, expand, and grow, and be what I would call courageous. So we're doing something systematically wrong, and we need to look at that.
Well, in one regards, David, I mean, what I hear here, and I am thinking about what you're saying, is it's not so much the educational system. In one regard, when you're talking about when they revere their teachers, they revere education and so on, that to me sounds like a cultural thing. And that means outside of the schools, I mean, that's like an entire cultural thing, because I don't think in this country anymore, as a society, as in a group, we really revere learning. I mean, turn on the television and watch any reality show for evidence of that. You know, look at what we do for entertainment. You know, look at the things that we focus on as a culture. You know, when's the last time that you know, as a culture, you know, we've really taken a scientist, for instance, and just said, oh, my God, this guy is, I mean, you know, the last Albert Einstein, that where we hold them up and say, okay, this is something to aspire to. I look at it and go, well, maybe we're just doomed.
Well, here's the good news. The good news is America has an incredible capacity to regenerate itself. I mean, it's our ability to innovate is second to none still. So it's really more about motivation. I mean, it's, you know, for example, if you in the discussions about education and what's wrong with it, just like in discussions about many aspects of American society right now, that there's too much finger-pointing going on. You know, to me, it's about self-reflection. So as a parent, asking, what should I be doing as an educator? Because parents are also key educators in the raising of their children. Teachers asking, what should I do as a teacher? Educational leadership asking, what should we do? Business community understanding, what is our social responsibility in the education of children? I mean, we've heard it takes a village to raise a child. But in this particular case, education was something that happens with everyone, everywhere, through a multitude, a variety of relationships that are created along the way. And the good big question we should ask is, why are we waiting for someone else to do when we have a part of the solution within ourselves?
David Scott, via the telephone in Singapore, author of the book called The Longest Distance. You mentioned relating, and I think in the conversation, it's possible that there's going to be cliches kind of entered in. As far as teachers and administrators and parents, as you mentioned, can you be specific? What intrinsically can these bodies do to really, you know, get the new educational process instilled, or at least heading that way in America?
Well, let's just start, first of all, at the school level, it starts with the leadership. And, you know, I've seen great leaders in the public system. I've seen great leaders in the private system. And let's just say I've also seen less than in both. It's actually not a private versus public discussion, which we seem to be, sort of hell-bent on focusing on. It's actually about leadership that is firm and fair and friendly, let's just call it, at the same time. So they create an environment that where the child feels safe and secure and has the open to expanding and learning. And the teachers themselves, to me, it's about building bridges. If you've got 32 children in your classroom, you have 32 independent bridges that you must create in order to be most effective as a teacher. And today's teacher is not that sage on the stage anymore. Today's teacher needs to be that guide on the side, needs to be a facilitator of the process. That's how you empower children in their own learning process, because I feel like we've essentially disenfranchised and disempowered ourselves as a nation. We're a nation that tends to be a sense of over-entitlement and an under-sense of personal responsibility. And you have to ask yourself, to what part has education played in the new generations coming up that way?
So is kind of what you're saying, I look at it as celebrating mediocrity with the everyone wins attitude, as opposed to, hey, look, Johnny's really good at English, or, you know, Sally's really awesome at math, and everybody just gets the participation medal as opposed to, you know, trying to actually give them a reason to excel.
Most classrooms teach to the middle. They do. Those that get on the extremes get lost. Those who are excelling, for example, in that particular subject, they're just left to the side or even asked to tutor the other students, which is fine as long as it's not affecting their own progress.
Exactly.
The other side of it is those who are struggling in that particular subject are also left behind because there's only so much attention that can be provided when you're essentially in a 1 to 32 ratio in the classroom. So that we're teaching to the middle, so we are teaching to mediocrity, to the average, to the mean.
You were talking about the leadership. Let's move over to, I guess, go down the line or across the line to the teachers.
Yes, teachers in terms of leadership.
Well, teachers, I mean, when you're, you know, just to kind of go back to the earlier part of the discussion when you talked about relating and things that, you know, things that people need to do to kind of, you know, kind of get things instead of just sit there and go, oh, it's messed up, there's nothing we can do about it. Maybe, you know, and people do put a lot of things on the teachers.
Leadership, the role of leadership. And again, I would say, you know, where are our great leaders now? Those that are willing to be courageous. And then from the absolute root word of le coeur, French for the heart, and age, I'd say, okay, if there was ever an age where we need heartfelt leadership, it's now. And, you know, the willingness to take risks and take chances. I mean, our systems now in the bureaucracy, and in particular in our public education system, really, you know, it's more of a function of society that it's safer to not take risk. The fear of what could possibly be the repercussions of sort of the public or the media or social media if you take risks and maybe come up short is something that's I think, inhibiting our leaders from coming forward and actually taking chances, which we need to do right now. We need to shake it up a bit. Teachers we talked about and the role that they need to play. And then the partnerships, okay? There are partnerships. The parent is a partner in the process. It's not an absentee situation. It's once we signed up and we brought a child into the world, we signed up for the long term. And I wonder how many parents took as much time to think about that level of commitment and responsibility as maybe we did in the time it took to establish where we were going to live or what kind of car we're going to drive, because this is a very big decision we made when we brought children into the world. We're in it all the way.
So I'm sure in our 15 listener, you know, pool, there's maybe some parents out there or some grandparents. Talk to the parent out there saying actively, this is what you can do to get involved. Or if you've seen somebody, a parent, make a difference, you know, single-handedly, what did they do? What can they do here?
Okay. Well, you know, and again, this is just my approach. I'm a parent. I'm also a grandparent now. And my approach is, you know, are we disconnecting? Are we unplugging in order to plug into something more valuable? For example, the television. You know, too many families in America have that TV going, for example, while we're sitting at the dinner table. Now, that dinner table discussion, supporting that child by saying, look, what did you do today? You know, what, and engaging in a conversation where the child knows that look, somebody's watching, somebody cares, and actually, what I'm doing when I'm at school matters. Okay, so that's one very important part, is that we just connect more. We connect more with our children. And I know that the challenges of today, you know, as, you know, sort of dual-income working families make it a bit more difficult. But, you know, as somebody quite bright once said, it's there's no greater responsibility or role we play. There's no more greater job we have in the world than to be a parent. So that is our number one job. And I think America, we just need to kind of take a second look at that and say, okay, where's the family structure? Where's the sense of support? And then in terms of involvement in the school directly, I think those good schools that are out there, and there are many good schools, not only encourage it, but almost make it a requirement that parents participate in the activities at the school, and they come in and support, and they volunteer. Grandparents, I mean, there's the greater wisdom. they're the ones that were the backbone of this country. They're the ones that made this country what it is right now. And our new generations, we're kind of riding the coattails of that. And we need to actually take more responsibility.
David, are you hanging out in Singapore because you got frustrated in what you were seeing here in America and you were like, threw your hands up in the air and said, you know what, you guys are on your own. I'm going to Singapore where they study and have good grades.
Well, the Asian systems have their own challenges over here. I live in a country right now where it's difficult when you go down the street and you walk into a retail shop and to step one set outside the rule and try to problem solve something with an attendant there is almost impossible because, again, they had a very teacher-centered model. Ours was much more student-centered in the U.S., and that teacher-centered model didn't empower people in terms of their own creativity and problem-solving skills. So there are other challenges over here. I'm still very actively involved and connected, and my book, The Longest Distance, is really about, it's actually a novel that's about one man's own process of education, you know, where we talk about the most important thing is the education of oneself, which is a continual process and personal growth. And so it's about one man's journey to a greater understanding of the truth of who he is. And if we all took that journey, we may find that that these kinds of discussions that we're having now might be very different in the future.
During the discussion, we talked about America maybe being a little bit lax and going for the, you know, everybody wins kind of a thing. And you, I love the term teaching to the middle. And in Asia, sometimes you hear about maybe too much pressure being too, the expectations just being, you know, insurmountable at times. Is there a place in the world, is there a country that kind of gets it, that kind of molds both those kind of into the right kind of, you know, expectation? Like we demand a lot, but we're not going to put the pressure on too much. Is there a place that does it right?
Yeah, I would say look to Scandinavia, to the Nordic countries, and in particular look to Finland. My former wife was Finnish, so I spent quite a bit of time there. And, you know, just in general, if you don't mind my saying, if you know nothing about a society, look to two things. How do they treat their elders, and how do they treat their children? And they'll tell you most everything you need to know about a society and its future. And in Finland, for example, they have a wonderful approach. They're not forcing children to learn how to read at 4 and 5 years of age. They wait until the eyes are completely firmly developed, which usually takes 6 or 7 years, as I understand it. So these children, they're the most literate country in the nation or in the world. They consistently rank in the top 5 in terms of performance to the children, the students. But at the same time, though, these kids, they have a wonderful balance of work and play for the children and also for the adults. And so, to me, it's the Finnish education system is a perfect example of what can happen when you kind of take your foot off the pedal instead of pushing it further on the pedal, and you allow children to be children and you allow them to grow up naturally. And at the same time, you provide them with the right kind of instruction, curriculum, and program that allows for the full development of all aspects of themselves, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually even.
David, we know it's coming up on midnight your time. Is there a website you have that you want to throw out there?
Yeah, well, there's two. There's my author website. It's just authordavidscott.com. And the work we're doing in the world right now is Unite, U-N-I-T-E, education.com, uniteeducation.com. So we're balancing it, or, you know, we're writing about it, and we're also hopefully doing something about it through Unite.
And if people want to take a look at the book, I'm sure that's available on your author website, correct?
It is, or through Amazon.com and the other mediums these days. So, I invite people to take the journey.
Very good. Hey, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it. Have a great rest of your, a couple minutes of your day, and we'll be in touch. Maybe have you back.
Much appreciated.
Take care. David Scott, again, author, davidscott.com or uniteeducation.com. We got a break, 8:45.